From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 15th day of January, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Aaron Hager will join us for just a bit. I talked to him about the new dicamba rules and what that means for dicamba application on soybean in Illinois, other parts of the nation as well. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk about the agriculture weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass at Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn in Chicago at $5.31.5 finished 2¾ of a cent lower today. The May down 3, $5.34¾ the settlement price, and corn for the December at $4.60 up 2¼. March soybeans down 13¾ at $14.16¾. In November, up a penny and a quarter at $11.97¾. Bean meal at $4.63.20 down $1.70. The bean oil, $1.26 lower at $41.85. Soft red winter wheat up 5.5 cents, and the hard red 6.5 higher. Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, is here now to discuss what happened on this Friday in Chicago at the marketplace. Hey, Mike, happy Friday to you. How are things going there in Atchison weather-wise today?
Well, we've turned from about the low 50s and sunny to very strong winds the last 36 hours. And in fact, it's interesting you asked that, Todd, because a client out in Hays, Kansas, which is probably about 4.5 hours away from me, closer to the Colorado border, is wondering and worrying that he's maybe even seeing some wheat get pulled out of the ground because the gusts out here have been in the 60s and 70 miles an hour range and constant winds of the 30s at times. So I think there's a real situation developing with the drier areas that have not gotten rains. Or a snowpack like the parts of Texas and Oklahoma and even southern Kansas and that part of the wheat belt, which got, you know, a foot of snow or so probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. They're looking a lot better than they were. But there's a lot of the state that got missed, and a lot of that area is closer to Colorado, kind of where the drought started. So I think that between that and, you know, kind of blending our weather together with what's going on with Russia and the uncertainty there, I think wheat's going to continue to keep a real, real volatile market play in action through the next 3 months.
It did manage to hold strength through the day, despite some losses in some of the other grains and oil seeds. This is in part, as you mentioned, global issues. How do you see wheat playing out over the next week or so?
I'll give you two answers briefly. You know, we came into the report week, last Friday's close, and soft red wheat at just under 640. Well, we closed December out at just over 640. So we were going into the report this week with very little premium, especially given the fact that we had been told pretty concretely by the time the report came out that Russia was going to institute a higher export tax for wheat and that they were going to probably do it sooner. We think that it's probably going to be the same date, but it's going to be a higher number. USDA's number, that's part number one. Part number two is we've got a USDA that actually increased the production for Russia from 84 million to 85.3 million tons. The last estimate for Sovcon was 79 to 83. So they're essentially at 80 or 81 million. That's a big difference. And so I think both fundamentally and from a price perspective of premium, wheat is carrying a substantial discount. That's the soft red market. I think the hard red market is carrying even a bigger discount given that it's so cheap compared to soft red wheat. So in the short term, I'd be watching for the hard red wheat to gain on soft red, especially since the USDA came out with 12% more soft red wheat acres. And if I get that hard red boom in the prices after we come back from the Martin Luther King holiday, I'll be a lot less worried about the dollar finding a bottom and the crude oil finding a top.
You're not suggesting that wheat's leading the sector. This is just an hard red and soft red function as it relates to the two different types of wheat.
Yes, that is what I'm suggesting in the next after the next 30 to 45 days. I think before wheat comes back in other words, as the leader. What I think in the interim period is that the corn needs to keep acres bought, and that the USDA report this past week suggests we are just as tight on stocks in corn here in the United States as we are in soybeans, because we still don't have a lot of the numbers from USDA adding up yet. And I think we have a lot less competition in corn in South America than we do in beans for substitute. I will throw out a caveat, Todd. There were three big news items this week surrounding EPA and them loosening restrictions one way or the other on biofuel blending. And Friday's update scared me the most as far as potential loss of demand at some time in the future here. And that was the idea that the refiners, because of COVID, may not have to blend as much biofuel. So corn is very nerve-wracking right now, because that's such a nice export picture, but the domestic picture looks a lot more dim than it did just 10 or 15 days ago.
And as you said, this is the third story from US EPA, or about US EPA considering this, though there is nothing confirmed at this point. But it appears that the Trump administration, as it begins to transition out of office, is really expecting to make a change in the RFS as it relates to ethanol and its blending into the gasoline supply for the United States. Turn your attention directly to corn and soybeans now. The bean market down about 15 cents for the day. Is that just going back and taking away some of the profits from yesterday?
Yeah, I think so. I think we had pre-Martin Luther King holiday profit taking. We got to realize that since the end of December, we're up about $1.04 in the front end March soybeans, even with the correction we saw on Friday. You can't read too much into it. Coming back on Monday night, we want to really watch what South America rain plays out, because the next 3 days looks the wettest we've seen in probably 3 months for both the driest areas of Argentina and some of the driest areas of Brazil. You throw on top of that the fact that we had a record December crush show up on the NOPA numbers on Friday. Meal market closed down not much more than a couple, $3. Very strong close there, and no technical damage done. Meal still my leader in the soybeans. As we talked about on Commodity Week, the USDA report left me with where's the drought, kind of a where's the beef type scenario. Where's the drought in Brazil if USDA is keeping their production at 133 and Brazil harvest right around the corner? So beans to me still have the biggest premium.
What are you going to be watching in the next month?
Well, besides the dollar crude oil relationship and the fiscal stimulus and how much we need to push more inflation into these markets on a commodity basis, I think it really goes back to the U.S. price of soybeans at the Gulf versus Paranagua in Brazil, because that really, at the end of the day, is what has led us to this point, is that Brazil ran out. China needed it because of hog herd repopulation. And we don't know if we've rationed enough, but USDA's numbers really keep me questioning that we probably did. So that's probably the biggest thing to watch as far as what will leak the first, what will put in the top first. I still think it's the soybeans.
Hey, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Have a great weekend and happy holiday, Todd.
Happy holiday to you as well. Glad you were on Commodity Week yesterday, too.
Me too. Thanks for joining me.
Mm-hmm. That's Mike Zuzlo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. For those of you who want to listen to Commodity Week, it's coming up on our home station today. Many of these radio stations over the weekend, and you can find it online right now at WILLAG.org. Now, there's a new label for dicamba applied to soybean, and as you'll hear, it includes a whole slew of changes farmers need to be prepared for this growing season. Now, last fall, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, US EPA, announced new five-year registrations for the dicamba-containing products Xtendimax, Engenia, and Tavian. These labels include new and or additional application restrictions. For instance, says University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager, the herbicides can only be used on dicamba-resistant soybean.
If you remember, the labels of the initial products for the last 3 or 4 years have included essentially a similar listing of crops as you would find on the Clarity label. That is no longer the case. So, for example, Xtendimax now cannot be applied to a cornfield.
There are also new restrictions as it relates to the buffer zones and endangered species, says Extension's Hager. That last note is really important because the list of Illinois counties in the Endangered Species Protection Bulletin, that can be found on the government's EPA website sometimes changes.
One of the biggest potential consequences of this would be farmers or applicators in 5 or 6 counties that may not even be aware that now the new buffer requirements apply to them as well, since they are now in a county with endangered species.
Some Illinois counties have been taken off of that list. Others have been added. There are 5 different counties on the 2021 Endangered Species Protection Bulletin list than in previous years. These are Grundy, Kankakee, Livingston, Effingham, and Marion. The full 2021 list includes 18 Illinois counties. Even with the 5 additional counties, that number is down from the 27 that were listed back in the year 2019. On this Friday afternoon, let's check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us today. Interesting, as I got up this morning, there was a little snow. It was kind of cool, and then it's sort of gone away. Can you tell me what's happening?
Yeah, it's kind of a neat feature in atmospheric sciences that we have setting up over us. So 2 days ago, coming out of the northern plains in the Canadian Prairie was a vigorous low-pressure system. And I'm not sure if you saw some of the reports, but there were winds in southern Alberta and Saskatchewan all the way down into, you know, Montana and the northern plains that were getting up there in the 70, 80, 90-mile-an-hour range, producing actually quite a bit of damage, which is unfortunate. Well, that storm system, which was rapidly intensifying, is just completely stalled and is sitting over the state of Illinois. And what happens in the atmosphere is we have what we call a vertically stacked system, which means the upper level low is sitting right on top of the surface low. Now you're going, well, why are you telling me this? Well, normally to get these things to move to the east, the upper level low is typically just behind or back to the west of the surface low. In other words, the upper level feature keeps producing a new area of low pressure out ahead of it and everything moves to the east. Well, this is all stacked up. It's going to sit there and spin. Today, we're going to see some pretty interesting weather because of that, because our temperatures, while they are cold at the ground, are really cold aloft. And that actually gives us an unstable atmosphere in the middle of winter. And we're going to get these convective bursts of snow, these little snow squalls. So this is what's going to happen. Sun's going to pop out. It's going to feel like everything's fine. That little bit of snow is going to melt. And then a moment later, it's going to cloud up and snow like mad for 10 or 15 minutes. And then it's going to go back that way again. And we're just going to see this throughout the day on Friday. And then some leftover snow on the backside of this on Saturday, even maybe a little bit on Sunday. But none of it's going to accumulate to where we have anything to think about. So that's it. That's the cool stuff going on in the weather, you know, just today. And it's always fun to see the atmosphere pulling off these neat little tricks.
It's nice. actually pretty mild, too, I guess. Is that going to stay with us?
Well, yeah. In the near term, we aren't going to break away from our more mild winter pattern for at least another week plus. And what I mean by mild is, yeah, our temperatures are still in the 30s and maybe cracking 40 with overnight lows in the 20. But, you know, it's mid-January. We're used to, at times, getting our temperatures down into the single digits and even colder. And all that air is far away from us. Polar vortex is split, coldest air on the planet's in Russia right now, not over North America. And it's just too far displaced to get here and to cause problems. We're going to have to wait possibly till the very end of the month where we can get more sustained shots at cold air. And then February looks to be one of those Februaries where we'll be glad it only has 28 days.
Why? What's happening that makes that the case?
Yeah, so out in the Pacific, the jet stream is pulling a 180 on us. The pattern is doing what we call retrograding. And all that means is the big standing waves in the atmosphere, well, they're sliding west, which is going to take the jet stream and dip it into a trough over the west. They could not be happier because that's going to give them better chances of precipitation in February. And then it's also going to put a ridge over the southeast, and we get tucked in between the two. The jet stream screaming over our heads. Those low pressure systems are pulled along the way, and we're likely going to have a much more active pattern than we have had lately. So all eyes are on Alaska. That's where all this is getting set up right now.
Yeah. So my big question then is, the drought monitor shows a lot of dry areas. Does this do anything to it?
It does, but it's not completely corrective of that drought area. So we've been, of course, watching it. And even over the last 2-3 months, We've seen in total maybe a 10% improvement on the total area in drought, but we still have about 60% of the United States in some phase of drought. And of course, that's tucked away in the southern plains, the northern plains, and then getting back into the four corner states and west. That's where the greatest drought is. And here's something important to think about, because lots of folks are trying to compare this to 2012. Not a good comparison. In 2012, the drought was in Texas and Oklahoma and New Mexico and in the southeast, and not such widely spread across the west. A whole different atmospheric setup in 12 compared to 2021.
What are the seasonals telling us?
Well, the seasonals would give us a clue to tell us that the second half of winter has got a much better chance of being more active in the Ohio River Valley, which is what I want to see. I want to see us replace that soil moisture this time of year rather than, you know, cutting into our spring planting windows. So let's get it recharged with some good storm track right through the Ohio River Valley, giving us more precip. That's in the forecast, seems to be there. Problem is south, you know, if you just looked at the country and divided it north versus south, going from California all the way to South Carolina, I just see better chances of drier weather there in the long haul. So February and March in some of the seasonal models. And I don't like seeing that. I never want to see drought in the southeast in March. That's not good for us.
Finally, one word. Well, kind of one word. La Nina.
La Nina. One Spanish phrase, right? There you go.
Correct.
You know, it's peaking. We've started to see some warming. We've been talking about that for the last month or so off of South America. Big push of trade winds, though, and cold water in the Central Pacific, which means we're going to have this thing around for a while. Now, what it's done in South America, it's rained plenty this week in Argentina, and they have had drought up until this point. We're still in widespread drought across the rest of Brazil's northern growing areas when you look at precipitation statistics. What I mean is parts of Mato Grosso are averaging about 20 inches in deficit when you look back over the last 6 months. And that's a lot, given that the rain should just be in the last couple of months here, given that the beginning of that's the dry time. Long story short, as they are rapidly harvesting this first crop of beans, some reports say that they're going to be, you know, 15 to 21 days late in getting it out. And they're not expecting the yields to be as good as they were because of how dry some pockets have been. The long-range models have just been playing flip-flop on us, telling us what February is going to look like. But at this point, I think the delays are already baked in, and that Safrinha corn crop is going to go in late. So I think that's going to be the real trick, is watching the progress of one crop coming out and another crop growing in to see if we continue to see some weather support in the markets moving forward.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. He helped us to wrap up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.